Well, good morning, TNC family, on this third Sunday in March, where today here we are in part 5 of a 6-part series, each week considering a single verse from the scriptures, a verse to dwell on, memorize, and let soak into our hearts and minds in a way that can help us experience the presence of the divine in the universe and the goodness of God in our lives. And today's text is from Luke chapter 12 and verse 21, the climactic sentence of Jesus after he tells a story about a hardworking, wealthy farmer who had an abundant harvest, a great financial year, after which, verse 17, he thinks to himself, "Now what shall I do? My barns are full, and I have no place to store my additional crops." But verse 18, he gets this idea. "Now I know what I'll do," he says. "I will tear down my old barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have enough resources stored up so I can rest easy for many, many years." Verse 20, "But God said to him, 'You fool, you don't know it yet, but you're going to die tonight. And then your barn full of goods, everything you've stored up in banks and IRAs and storage units and so on, then who's going to get it?" And now, today's verse, verse 21. Jesus concludes the story with this one sentence. "A person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not be rich towards God." A person is a fool, Jesus says, to store up earthly wealth, but not be rich towards God, which puts us squarely in front of two possibilities, TNC. Number one, prioritizing generosity towards the things of God, or number two, prioritizing being generous with myself, me. And specifically, this is a story about money. It's not about generosity with our time or talents or words and so on. It's about a failure to think rightly about money and wealth. And if you follow the life of Jesus in the scriptures, and for that matter, the counsel of God throughout the entire Bible, then a phrase like this is not all that surprising, because the Bible talks over and over and over about how the way we think about money and handle our money is directly linked to our ability to thrive under the loving guidance of God in a way the universe has been designed. Which means the call on our life is the same: to align our thinking and actions surrounding money with the wisdom and ways of God, so that we can personally experience and then extend maximum abundance, peace, and order into the world as God has created it. And so, I want to mention now 3 ways to understand, think about, use money, not as a fool, but as someone who is wise, living with richness towards God. And here's number 1, someone living with richness towards God understands that money is a mirror. A phrase I first read actually in the writing of Bear Grylls, the former British Special Forces officer, adventurer, author, TV producer, worldwide leader of the Boy Scouts, in his book, A Survival Guide for Life, a book about lessons he's learned traveling the world and working with folks of all ages, backgrounds, and personalities. "Money is like a mirror," he writes. "It reveals what sort of person we really are. That is where the real value of money lies, to distinguish the character of its owner." Which is really a take on Jesus' words in Matthew chapter 6, where Jesus says, quote, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Look at your treasure, Jesus says, and then you'll see your heart reflected. "Where's my heart? Where's my heart?" Answer, "Oh, there it is, right where I put my treasure." Which is why, when I do premarital counseling from time to time, and we get to the section about finances, I often say that the best way to learn about the soul of your partner is by watching the way they spend money. "Show me where their treasure is," I say, "and I'll show you where their heart is." And I go on to say that, for example, if I opened up your partner's checkbook or online banking statement and I saw that they spent money on tickets to Braves, Hawks, Dream, and United games, plus, oh, there's a purchase for a sports jersey and a sports online magazine subscription. Oh, and a FanDuel Fantasy Sports League account. Then we could rightly assume that they care a lot about sports, that their time and attention, their heart, follows the money. Or I say, if I opened up their checkbook or online banking statement and saw Nordstrom Rack, Marshalls, TJ Maxx, Home Goods, and so on, we could rightly predict another truth about their time, attention, and heart. Or if you looked at someone's finances and saw that in the last 6 months, they had given money to the local chapter of the Young Republicans and also to the Republican state senator's campaign and also to that national Republican presidential candidate. And also they ordered from Amazon a t-shirt with that Republican slogan. Well, then you know a lot about that person's heart. And it's the same with the Democratic Party. One of the couples I counseled, I'll never forget, in response to this, the bride told me that her husband-to-be owned some Home Depot stock, and even though they lived 0.4 miles from Lowe's, he would not shop at Lowe's or Ace Hardware. He would drive 5 miles away to the Home Depot because his life followed his money. Show me where your treasure is, Jesus taught, and I'll show you where your heart is. Which means, if your heart today is feeling small or imprisoned, then it is likely that your money is too. But if your heart feels large and free, if you care deeply about other people, about the community, about the city and the world, then likely your money is going out into the community, the city, and the world. Because money is a mirror, which makes it a great diagnostic on the state of your heart. Check out how and where you're spending your money, and you'll be able to learn a lot about your own character. But that's not all money is, because there's a second way to think about money and to use money, not as a fool, but as someone who is wise, living with richness towards God. Here it is, number two. Someone living with richness towards God understands that money is a first domino. Because when Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also, you have to notice the order. First treasure, then your heart. Money is a first domino, an idea I first came across, actually, in Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habit, a book about how habits form in the mind, in which he has a chapter on what he calls keystone habits. A keystone habit is one where if I change it, it will set off a kind of chain reaction of other habits. It'll catalyze new patterns of thinking and desiring and behaving. Quote, keystone habits start a process that, over time, transforms everything. And he looks at the company Alcoa, for example. Profits plummeting, worker morale at all-time lows, stocks tanking, facilities in need of repair, workmen's comp injuries at an all-time high. And then Paul O'Neill becomes CEO, and O'Neill says, I don't care about profits. I don't care about stock options or facilities. What? Yeah, I don't care about profits or stock options or facilities. I care only about worker safety. And instead of cutting spending, he spends more money on employee safety, and he fires managers who don't prioritize worker safety. He prioritizes just that one habit, employee safety. And in just a matter of time, Alcoa's profits hit a record high, and stock options get sweeter, and employee morale on surveys way up, and they have more applicants wanting to work there than jobs available, and facilities become state-of-the-art, and by the time O'Neill retires, the company's annual net income is 5 times larger than before he arrived. Why? One habit, safety, a keystone habit. And what Duhigg and his research team discover is that this applies to pretty much everything in life. Take physical health. You want to get in better shape? He says start with one habit, food journaling. Because they found that if people start keeping a food journal for a week or two, just keeping track of everything they eat, it causes people to see patterns and recognize habits and tendencies and plan menus differently and start exercising, which brings more oxygen to their brain, which makes them happier and more fun to be around, which helps their friendships. Keystone habit, food journaling. The first domino, just that one habit, tends to be a keystone habit from which all kinds of other habits are broken and formed. And do you remember that number one New York Times bestseller a few years ago by the retired U.S. Navy Admiral William McRaven? It was that small book with the title, Make Your Bed, subtitle, Little Things That Can Change Your Life and Maybe the World, in which he writes, if you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. And he goes on to say, because it'll lead to an ordered day, which will lead to a more ordered conversation, which will lead to better friendships and teamwork and on and on and on. And this is exactly what the church in Acts chapter 4 comes to understand about money. And specifically, generosity with money, because the first and most obvious characteristic in the church was if folks made money, they shared it. If there was a need, they met it. And because of this, they enjoyed the favor of all the people. In fact, if you know your history, you know that many people looked at the church and said, some of their beliefs are kind of strange. I don't believe all that they believe, but oh my word, I want to be part of a community of generosity like that. And so the church grew and grew and love grew and unity grew. And I quoted it before, but it's still considered a definitive study on the impact of generosity on the lives of people. It's a book called The Paradox of Generosity by sociologist Christian Smith, who received a $5 million grant to study the science of generosity from Notre Dame University. Quote, "It's not a philosophical or a religious conclusion. It is a sociological fact. Those who give receive back in turn. By spending ourselves for others' well-being, we enhance our own standing. In letting go of what we own, we ourselves move toward flourishing." And I just think this is exactly what the writer of Proverbs means when he writes, chapter 11, verse 24, "The world of the generous," what happens after generosity? "The world of the generous gets larger and larger. The world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller." So I just say, TNC, make sure you're pushing that first domino in your life with wisdom and responsibility, but also with faith and generosity. Because generosity is central to the way the universe was designed to operate, and it is central to the way you were designed to live your best life. First, money is a mirror. Second, money is a first domino. And then here's number three, a third way to think about money, use money, not as a fool, but as someone who is wise, living with richness towards God. Number three, someone living with richness towards God understands that money is a drug. That's right. We should think about money as something with the power and potential to do so much good, bring healing and health and stability and longevity. But it can also become addictive and lead to slavery and depression and envy. Aesop has a famous fable about this, about a man who's under the thumb of money's control, and no matter what goes on in his life, his one remedy is, he thinks, if I just had more money, then things would be better. And soon, good fortune strikes, and he does get the opportunity to have limitless money, but it comes with a catch. The catch is that his neighbor will always get twice as much as he, so the man wishes for a new home. And it's a beautiful and big home, but his neighbor's is twice as beautiful and big. Then he wishes for a new horse, and he loves his new horse, but it disturbs him that his neighbor now has two wonderful horses, and he wishes for new clothes, and instantly they're his, but he has trouble enjoying them because his neighbor's new clothes are twice as nice. And the man's beside himself because it just isn't right that his neighbor always has more than him. "What about me?" he cries. And so finally, in the story, the man wishes, "I would like to be blind in one eye." Because the man is a slave to money. He is owned by money. And into this reality, Jesus speaks, Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, "No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Which is the point of the very first parable we started today with. Don't serve money, Jesus says, because it's not even yours to begin with. Yeah, some of it is yours to manage while you're on this earth, but you can't take it with you. It's not yours, not ultimately. It's going to go to somebody else. I read a blog some time ago about a woman who was on an airplane, and the flight personnel came by with the pretzels and the Sprite and so on, but she just got the pretzels, and she didn't put the tray down. Just put him next to her on that little armrest between her and a man, a stranger sitting next to her. And before long, without saying a word, the guy sitting next to her reaches over, opens the bag, takes out a pretzel, and starts to eat it. She writes, "I was furious inside. Those were my pretzels." But instead of saying something, she sort of defiantly reaches into the bag, takes out a pretzel, starts to eat it herself. And he just smiles and nods at her. Then he reaches in and takes another pretzel, and she's livid, so she reaches in and takes another pretzel. They both keep doing this until there's only one pretzel left, and the man reaches in and takes the last pretzel, breaks it in half, and offers half to her. Then he eats it himself, and she's beside herself angry. The plane lands, and as they are taxiing, she reaches for her pocketbook and sees that in her purse is her bag of pretzels. Not only did he not eat her pretzels, she was eating his pretzels. She writes, "It struck me later, he was less interested in who owned the pretzels and more interested in sharing them." Now, TNC, all of us have a few bags of pretzels. A wallet with some pretzels in it, or a bank account or two with pretzels in them, some CDs or stocks with pretzels. And too often we wrestle with this ownership business when we'd be wiser to get into the sharing business, which is the main point of Jesus' parable in Luke chapter 12. It's not yours. You're just managing it for a while. And here's one practical suggestion as we end surrounding this. Pull out your wallet, hold it in the palm of your hand, look at it, and say out loud, "Hey, that's not my wallet. It's not mine. It's God's, and he's entrusted me to use it." Verse 21, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not be rich towards God. And what does it mean to live with richness towards God surrounding our money? It means to understand that, number one, money is a mirror. Number two, money is a first domino. And number three, money is a drug. And if we can get this right, then we can get so much of the universe right, because the way we think and handle money is directly linked to our ability to live under the loving guidance of God and the way the universe has been designed. Let's pray. God, I pray for every person listening now. Help us to see our money rightly, and help us to find the courage and the joy to share it generously and wisely and with great confidence that there is nothing wiser than being rich towards you. And now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you, would make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, would turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.